Anybody there? Yes, you are. Hey, listen, we have some good news for our Canadian listeners. 2 weeks ago, roughly, July 1st, was Canada Day. And Canadians awoke to a startling, Bloomberg.com calls it, a startling, if pleasant, piece of news. For the first time in recent history, the average Canadian is richer than the average American. According to data from Environics Analytics Wealthscapes, wow, published in the Toronto Globe and Mail, the net worth of the average Canadian household in 2011 was $363,202, while the average American household, $319,970. A few days later, Canada and the U.S. both released the latest job figures. Canada's unemployment rate fell again to 7.2%. America's stagnant 8.2%. Canada continues to thrive while the U.S. struggles to find its way out of an intractable economic crisis and a political sine curve of hope and despair. Oh, damn. The difference grows starker by the month. The Canadian system is working. The American system is not. And it's not just Canadians who are noticing. Iceland is considering, here's an example, Iceland's considering switching its currency other than the krona. And the leaders of Iceland right now are focused on the Canadian dollar. Now, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. A study recently published in the New York University Law Review pointed out that national constitutions based on the American model are quickly disappearing. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in an interview on Egyptian television, admitted, quote, "I would not look to the United States Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. End quote. The natural replacement, the Canadian. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Achieving the status of legal superstar as it reaches its 30th birthday. It says here, since the 1990s, Canada has pursued a hard-headed, fiscally conservative form of socialism. Its originator was Paul Martin, who was finance minister for most of the 90s and served a stint as prime minister from 2003 to 2006. Alone among finance ministers in the Group of Eight Nations, he resisted the siren call of deregulation and insisted that the banks tighten their loan loss and reserve requirements. He also made a courageous decision not to allow Canadian banks to merge, even though these filthy criminal banking executives claim they would never be globally competitive unless they did. So the stability of Canadian banks and the concomitant stability in the housing market provide the clearest explanation for why Canadians are richer than Americans today. Oh, by the way, a little bit more here from Bloomberg. They say Paul Martin's balanced policies emerged organically out of Canadian culture, which is fair-minded and rule-following to a fault. The Canadian obsession with order can make for strange politics, at least in an American context. For example, of all the world's societies, Canada is one of the most open to immigrants, as anyone who has been to Toronto or Vancouver will have seen. Yet Canada also imposes a mandatory one-year prison sentence on illegal immigrants. Boom, to jail, do not pass go. And the majority of Canadians favor deportation. Canadians insist that their compassion be orderly, too. Now, according to Bloomberg, this immigration policy is neither liberal nor conservative in the American political sense. It just works. It just works. You could say exactly the same thing about Canada's economic policies. 200 years ago, last month, the War of 1812 began. Thomas Jefferson at the time declared, quote, "The acquisition of Canada this year, as far as the neighborhood of Quebec, will be a mere matter of marching." End quote. The U.S. at the time was comparatively enormous. We had 8 million people then. Canada at the time had 300,000. The Canadians, nonetheless, turned back the assault. Whipped our asses. So there you have it. Oh, Canada. Oh, Canada. No, that's not. No, that's something else. Anyway, to our Canadian listeners and their legion, congratulations. If it's any kind of an honor to be in better shape economically, politically, socially than the United States, which I doubt anymore, and not to take anything away from any of this, but, I mean, let's face it, look at us. look at what we do. Look at the United States. Look at our filthy, corrupt political system. Look at our just gouging, rapacious economic system. Look at our scrambling to maintain a dying empire by murdering people all over the goddamn planet. Take a look at us. So, not to take anything away from Canada at all. But Jesus, I mean, how hard do you have to work, really, to show the rest of the world that you know how to run your country better than the United States? So, Canada, congratulations. May you continue to lead in the Western Hemisphere. This hour is being sponsored by Alice in Arkansas. She has a little story. Listen here. This hour is sponsored in recognition of my postmaster, Ryan. He's worked for the U.S. Postal Service for 18 years. He lives in our community. His wife teaches at the local school. He is one of the full-time postmasters who do not have labor contract protections and are being weeded out and replaced with part-time workers. Ryan is smart, fast, compassionate, funny, helpful, and dedicated. And now he's also expendable, because the service he has provided for 18 years is considered worthless by this corporate culture, and it costs too much. From Alice at Helen Hollers, Alice in Arkansas. There, I mean, how typical what Alice writes about here. It dovetails perfectly with the story about the Canadian surge to be the best place to live in the Western Hemisphere. Maybe more than the Western Hemisphere. Maybe the Northern Hemisphere. Well, no, you got to consider the Scandinavian countries. But I like that term, a hard-headed yet compassionate socialism. Bada-bing, bada-boom! And yet capitalism, as an economic model, flourishes in Canada, too. So, we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Times have changed. Our kids are getting worse. They won't obey their parents. They just want to fight and curse. Should we blame the government or blame society?
Or should we blame the images on TV?
Even a real country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches? Should we blame the fire? Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no!
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
except for him. I'm a band.
Oh, how can you do that, making me look bad? You're such a hose hand.
Yeah, well, take off.
Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, well, listen to this. It's coming. You know what it is?
What?
It's a drum solo. Okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums.
Oh,
eh?
Get out. It is not.
It
You're
is
not.
So.
Stop
I learned.
Lying, will you?
Take off, eh?
Take off to the great white north. Take off.
21 past the hour, almost 22 past the hour. That's a good idea. Take off to the great white north. Canada.
Well, that's like it was sung by angels.
Not to bum you out, but got an interesting email here from Jude earlier this evening. And it's a link to some names at crooksandliars.com. And Jude writes, does anyone really care anymore, Mike? It seems as if these names are just letters arranged in a certain order. But let it be known, each one listed happens to be loved by someone we will never meet. Women Standing remembers and holds them close every day. George Stephanopoulos on his program on Sunday mentioned these names. These are American military who died in Afghanistan last week. U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Raul Guerra, 37, of Union City, New Jersey. U.S. Army Captain Bruce McFarland, 46 years old, Jacksonville, Florida. U.S. Army Corporal Juan Navarro, 23, of Austin, Texas. Army PFC Cameron Stamboth, 20, Spring Grove, PA. PFC, Army PFC Alejandro Pardo, 21, Porterville, California. Army PFC Trevor Adkins, 21, Spring Lake, North Carolina. Army Specialist Clarence Williams III, 23, Brooksville, Florida. Army Specialist Erica Alexson, 21, Eatonton, Georgia. Sergeant Ricardo Seija, 31, of Tampa. Specialist Jonathan Batista, 22, Kinellon, New Jersey, and Specialist Sterling Wyatt, 21, of Columbia, Missouri. According to the website iCasualties, the total number of Allied service members killed in Afghanistan is now 3,087. Was ages again, 21, 22, 31, 21, 23, 21, 21, 20, 23, 37, and 46. Do you realize you're living in a country that is at war? A country that is deploying troops, combat troops. We are in our 11th year. No? It's hard to realize, isn't it? The Republicans, for the 33rd time last week, they voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, health care reform. But they also put a little phrase in there to keep their own medical care. Do you know about this? When Congress passed this health care law, it required members of Congress to get their insurance on exchanges with the rest of the public. But for 33 times in voting to repeal that law, Republicans also voted to go back to the old system where these cockroaches get a sweeter deal than the rest of the country. And they also vote against a Democratic motion that said members of Congress who support repealing the health care law must also repeal the good stuff they get. They voted against that. See, the Democrats said, all right, if you're going to do that, let's just put this in there. The Republicans said, no. Such as lifetime care and insurance regardless of pre-existing conditions. This is what the cockroaches get. This is what the vermin in the House and the Senate get. Republican and Democrat alike. But the Democrats, you know, try to, every time the Republicans try to repeal the Affordable Care Act, the Democrats try to put a rider on that and say, okay, well, if we're going to do that, then let's take away ours too. Let's put that in there. Because they know it's not going to pass anyway. It's not going to pass the Senate. Even if it does, Obama will just veto it. I mean, the whole thing is just scummy, filthy Republican, sociopathic theater. But it's interesting, isn't it, that the Republicans always try to and always succeed in carving out a little niche for themselves. Well, would you call that hypocrisy? Huh? Would you?
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Alice at Heelan Howlers in Arkansas. You know who she is. So go to her website, HeelanHowlers.com, and you'll be amazed what's there. Anyway, her message, this hour is sponsored in recognition of my postmaster, Ryan. He's worked for the U.S. Postal Service for 18 years. He lives in our community. His wife teaches at the local school. He is one of the full-time postmasters who don't have labor contract protections and are being weeded out and replaced with part-time workers. Ryan is smart, fast, compassionate, funny, helpful, and dedicated, and now he's expendable because the service he has provided for 18 years is considered worthless by this corporate culture and costs too much. Ay. Thanks, Alice. This idea that Republicans vote against, for the 33rd time, Affordable Care Act, and yet cut out a little exemption for themselves. Well, we don't, you know. according to Huffington Post, Democrats tried to demonstrate how Republicans distanced themselves from voting to protect their own deal by capturing a slew of Republican members on video. The Democrats did this. And these Republicans saying they didn't vote to protect their own care. Oh, no. We didn't do that. The clip features a number of Republicans, including Republican budget freak Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Jesse Ferguson, a spokesman for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, referring to the fact that members of Congress are eligible for retirement benefits after just 5 years. Jesus Christ. He says, quote, House Republicans refuse to admit they voted to give themselves taxpayer-funded lifetime guaranteed health care instead of having the same health care as their constituents. Ferguson added, House Republicans didn't just vote to protect insurance company campaign donor profits this time. They're even helping themselves to lifetime taxpayer-funded government health care. Now they need to be honest with their constituents and admit it. Come on, Mr. Ferguson. Get real. There's not a Republican who's going to admit anything. Look at Mitt Romney. Look at this scumsucker. Romney. What is his old man released 12 years of tax returns. Romney is just dancing around. And you know, I keep reading this stuff. Well, why won't he release them? Oh, please. Why won't he release them? Come on. Oh, well. It's their game, not ours. I don't give a rat's ass about Romney, and I don't think you do either. He can take his tax returns and stuff them in his nostrils. Doesn't matter to me. Does it to you? Do you give a damn? Of course not. Do you give a damn about Obama's tax returns? Of course not. Global climate change? What global climate change? You've been following the news, I'm sure. The widest drought in this country in decades is spreading. Apparently they're not having a drought in Canada. I think they have gentle rain in Canada. They have verdant fields. They have amber fields of grain. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye. But in the United States, who moved my corn? The corn's all gone. You aware of that? Which is probably a good thing. It's all phony, fake corn anyway. It's not real corn. It's Monsanto corn. Only in the 1930s and the 1950s has a drought covered more land than it is covering now. That's according to federal figures released today. Now, so far, there's little risk of a Dust Bowl-type catastrophe. But crop losses could mount if rain doesn't come soon. Rain! Get old Rick Perry out there to pray for rain. Hey, let's all pray for rain, huh? In its monthly drought report, the National Climatic Data Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Watch this place get defunded very quickly. They announced that 55% of the country was in a moderate to extreme drought at the end of June. The conditions expanded last month in the West, the Great Plains, and the Midwest, fueled by the 10th driest June on record. Have you seen some of the video, topsoil cracked and dry? The percentage of affected land is the largest since December 1956, when 58% of the country was covered by drought. We now have 55%. And the situation now rivals even some years in the Dust Bowl era of the 30s. Although experts are quick to point out that this year's weather has been milder than that period. Don't worry, don't worry. And farming practices have been vastly improved since then. Don't worry, don't worry. Everything's okay. Go back to sleep, go back to sleep, go back to sleep. It's just a human interest story. Don't pay any attention. Right? Huh? But Have you seen all these auctions, these livestock auctions of farmers bringing cattle and hogs to market because they don't have anything to feed them? Says here, in southern Illinois, Kenny Broomer has lost 800 acres of corn that he grows to feed his 400 head of cattle and 30,000 hogs. 30,000 hogs? Now he's scrambling to find hundreds of thousands of bushels of replacement feed. He says, quote, where am I going to get that from? You have concerns about every morning when you wake up. The drought is bad, but that's just half the problem on this farm. 30,000 hogs? Can you imagine the smell of that place? Woo-hoo! You imagine the environmental impact, those 30,000 hogs with their nitrate-loaded, stinky poop effects? 38% of the corn crop is in danger, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So look for the... Now, you see, this is where all those good hard-shell Republicans out there in the farm belt, watch them now. Watch them as they all demand socialism. They're going to be demanding socialism. We need some help out here! Well, but capitalism says if you fail, you fail, dude. No, no! Hell no! As for you people in the city, we need we need help! Well, you know what Mitt Romney said about the auto industry? Let it goddamn die. He didn't use the GD word. He's a Mormon. Let it die! That's what capitalism about. Are you going to say that now, Mitster? Let all those farmers out there, let them go belly up, right? That's what capitalism's all about, boys. Come on. You want the government to help you? Well, why? I mean, you know, you folks are great libertarians out there. You want no help from nobody. You've been growing them bootstraps for generations out there, right? Well, you don't need the price supports either, do you? You don't need any of that stuff, do you? Then why are you taking it? Y'all always vote Republican. Republicans want to cut your goddamn throats. Of course, they'll continue to suck up to farmers because, you know, y'all vote Republican. But y'all are a bunch of damn hypocrites then, aren't you? Huh? Just like the farmers here in Georgia. All these good stalwart Republicans here in the great state of Georgia. Yeah, we got to stop these goddamn immigrants from coming in here with their tacos and their bean burritos and crap. So the state of Georgia did that. And now the farmers, of course, are going bankrupt. Why? Because there's nobody to pick the goddamn crops. That's why. Oh, my goodness. The law of unintended consequences is just like a huge invisible whip, isn't it? Whap!
You're gonna rise up righteous. You're gonna spread your wings. You're gonna retake the sky. But until that morning, they're gonna work you for peanuts.
This hour has been sponsored by Alice at Heel and Hollers in Arkansas. She has an ad that runs on our website, MikeMalloy.com. Always, 24/7, it's there. You need to go to her website and check out some of her products. I will guarantee you that everything we've ever gotten from her has been as advertised plus. I love her products. Anyway, her sponsor, she's sponsoring this first hour. And she has a message. This hour is sponsored in recognition of my postmaster, Ryan. He's worked for the U.S. Postal Service for 18 years. He lives in our community. His wife teaches at the local school. He's one of the full-time postmasters who don't have labor contract protections. And those postmasters are being weeded out and replaced with part-time workers. Ryan is smart, fast, compassionate, funny, helpful, and dedicated. Now he's expendable. Because the service he has provided for 18 years is considered worthless by this corporate culture. Alice in Helen hollers, thanks, Alice. Global climate change. A climatologist named Mark Svoboda with the Nebraska-based National Drought Mitigation Center said, quote, "This is definitely the epicenter right here in the heart of the Midwest." And this is a big come down for farmers. There was anticipation this was going to be a record year for corn. And they planted almost 100 million acres in corn, the most since 1937. And Department of Agriculture initially predicted that the average corn yields were going to be about 166 bushels per acre. So far, it's down to 146, and more reductions are considered coming. Boo, 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 boo. Climatologists have labeled this year's dry spell as, quote, a flash drought, because it developed in a matter of months, not over multiple seasons or years. Why, damn, I wonder what could be causing that. I mean, what could it possibly be? It must be the Russians. I know, it is the North Koreans who are doing this. The federal government is already moving to help farmers and ranchers. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack last week announced plans for streamlining the aid process. A major goal is to cut the time it takes to declare an agriculture disaster area. Oh, my goodness. But that's not the way it's supposed to work. You know, we live in the United States of America, where, you know, people are on food stamps. They're just a bunch of goddamn freeloaders. They ought to be thrown off. Go get a job. Well, a bunch of farmers who get all kinds of farm subsidies and price supports and, I mean, just on. And, of course, they work the land and they don't need any help from anybody. And if you try to butt your ass in, they will tell you as quickly as they can to get out of their faces. Except when all of a sudden they don't tell you to get out of their faces. And that's when they start screaming socialism. All of a sudden they love it. Want more of it. Am I wrong? Is this not the way it works? So why not just go all the way? Why not go to social democracy to begin with? Democratic socialism. Pull out the price supports. Turn these farms loose. And if they do get in trouble, well, every farmer will contribute a certain amount of his or her income into a fund. And the fund will be invested in Canada, not here. It'll be invested. It'll be run by Canadian banks so that we know that the farmers won't be screwed and cheated and lied to because they have rules in Canada. And then when things go belly up, they can draw from that bank at very low or zero interest rates. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Kind of, you know, socialism. But in the meantime, all the farmers, bless their hearts, who want nothing to do with these damn Democrats and their damn communist ideas, well, in the meantime, that's true only until the drought hits their farm. Then all of a sudden, why, we want everybody in America to help us out. We feed you. Yeah, you do. And we take note of that. And you're also feeding us a bunch of garbage, too. You're feeding us antibiotic-laced crap. You're feeding us genetically altered crap. You're fertilizing with poison. This dude here with 30,000 hogs, God knows how many rivers and streams he's brought to a screaming halt. 30,000 hogs? Isn't it funny the way our system works? Isn't it just an absolute knee slapper? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is a referral service.
Largest anti-nuke rally since the disaster at Fukushima, up to 250,000 people gathered today at a central park in Tokyo, demanding that the Japanese government halt its restart of that country's nuclear reactors. Have you heard about this? A unilateral decision last month by Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda to start bringing the country's reactors back online has angered many Japanese. On Monday, Japan time, organizers said tens of thousands of people filled the Tokyo Square to sing songs, beat drums, cheer on a series of high-profile speakers who called for more Japanese to make their voices heard. You know, you get a quarter of a million Japanese people to turn out in protest of the government. This is an issue that is deeply visceral to the Japanese people because it is not in their culture to protest like this. You would think that it's not in our culture to protest either. Christ, we can't get 0.1% of the population into the streets here to protest this predatory capitalism that's destroying everything. So somehow our culture absorbed something from cultures that are passive. We're like the North Koreans now. Oh, we'll turn out and celebrate the dear leader. We'll all wave pom-poms, but protest? Protest? An Oscar-winning musician, Ryuichi Sakamoto, told a crowd that braved scorching temperatures to gather at Yoyogi Park in Tokyo, quote, to stay silent in the wake of Fukushima is inhuman, end quote. Wow. Rally organizers have gone to great lengths to try to project a friendly image of all this, because, like I mentioned, this is a country where protesters of any kind are seen by many as fringe agitators at best and terrorists at worst. So, the Japanese people, knowing that their government is attempting to conduct policy that is detrimental, if not antithetical, to life in that country, the Japanese people are saying no. And can you blame them? I realize 200,000 or 50,000, whatever it was, is not much in a population of 38 million. You know, it's not even 10%. God forbid we should ever get 10% of Americans in the streets here. But taking into consideration the nature of Japanese culture, this is an enormous amount of people who are saying no. And look what has happened to Japan. Now there's flooding. Now there are landslides, more death, more destruction. But the government of Japan, which as near as I can gather from what I read, has been one corrupt administration after another for the past 40 or 50 years. The government of Japan is now acting in a manner that is making the Japanese people say, wait, stop. So, it's a shame that we can't get people in this country to protest, right? Oh, by the way, according to Daily Kos, one of the members there, Lefty Coaster, an important new poll is out showing most Americans believe in climate change and they think the government needs to be doing more to address the problem. according to this poll, most Americans say they believe temperatures around the world are going up and that weather patterns have become more unstable in the past few years. This poll was from the Washington Post and Stanford University. But they also see future warming as something that can be addressed, and majorities want government action across a range of policies to curb energy consumption, with more support for tax breaks than government mandates, of course. Give us tax breaks, and we'll all get in line and stop suffocating our planet. Oh, please. Now, this poll follows closely a report from the National Oceanographic, you know, the NOAA, scientists who are linking extreme weather to man-made climate change. And you know, it's amazing to me, the right-wing cockroaches in this country still insist, no. It's not man-made. God knows what he's doing. Now, here's one of the questions on this poll. As you may have heard, greenhouse gases are thought to cause global warming. In your opinion, do you think the government should or should not limit the amount of greenhouse gases the U.S. businesses put out? 77% said government should limit. 20% said government should not limit. 3% don't know. Oh, my God. And today, of course, on Friday, the United States declared a natural disaster in more than 1,200 drought-stricken counties in 26 states across the country. Wow. There was something in, Sunday Review section, New York Times? Either that or maybe a Saturday editorial, I forget, but recently, I think it was in the Times, maybe it was someplace else. But a respected climate scientist has made it very clear that the you see part of the destruction of this thin envelope within which we all live. Part of that destruction that's going on are coral reefs. Now, a lot of people don't pay any attention to coral reefs. You know, what's a coral reef? Oh, yeah, we went snorkeling near one. Hey, it was a lot of fun. There's been fish down there. But the coral reefs now have reached a point. They have crossed the tipping point. This scientist, and this is a result of global climate change also, and the crap that we're pumping into the atmosphere. And his point was very direct, that we've crossed that point. And we are looking towards a total collapse of coral reefs within the next 10 to 12 years. And there is no reversing it. I'm sorry, the next 10 to 30 years. There's no reversing it. So what scientists should be focusing on, or what governments should be focusing on, is what we are going to do to replace coral reefs as breeding grounds for fish. And the point, the subtext to this article was the fact that literally hundreds of millions, if not billions of people around the planet, India, Japan, Indonesia, the Philippines, make their living, and by make their living, I don't mean the, necessarily make money, but their life depends on the fish and the organisms that that come as a result of these coral reefs. So these people are now at risk. And the point, a further subtext to this article, without coming right out and saying it, was that this is part and parcel of this great die-off that is beginning to occur even as we speak. And it just seems, I don't know, it seems like nobody in positions of power are paying any attention. I know, let's sign a petition.
I should know to leave them all. They follow me through the storm with these stones I can't afford. Kids, take them back, you know that I'm bad. Does their talk astronaut?
Oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Janie Aguilar. Her message, this is for the anger proxy service your show provides. Thanks. Thank you, Janie. The anger proxy service. Hoo-ah. Thanks, Janie. Phone lines are open, 877-996-2556, if you want to call in. There's a website somebody sent me a link. It's Ritholtz, RITHOLTZ.com, Ritholtz.com/blog. I don't know who the writer is, but he or she comes up with, you know, something that we've talked about in this program often. Why don't the corrupt players on Wall Street and in the nation's capital show remorse for the destructive actions, and why don't we stop them? Now, they don't show remorse. I think we all are in agreement because they are psychopaths. They are incapable of showing remorse. It's either a joke to them or there's no emotion at all. Why don't we stop them, though, is a pretty good question. And as the blogger points out, bankers, regulators, and politicians have been caught in lie after lie and scandal after scandal, right? It just never stops every time we turn around. Now this London overnight rate, the LIBOR, that is very quietly spreading all over the planet. Every single thing that has to do with banking is a fraud. Every single bit of it. That's starting to dawn on us, isn't it? Everything. Is your checking account a fraud? Yeah. Of course. Of course it is. We have to deal with a bank for our business account here, but we barely use it. I would no more deal with a bank for a car loan or a mortgage or a checking account or a credit card than I would deal with Satan. I'm serious. I don't know why anybody still maintains a non-commercial relationship with a bank. What is wrong with you? I mean, they're crushing the life out of you and your kids and your grandkids. Why continue to give them your money? I mean, what the hell is wrong with people? Oh, never mind. Don't even start that. So why haven't the banks and the regulators and the politicians who have been caught in lie after lie and scandal after scandal all over the place, all around the planet, with the exception of Canada, because the Canadian banking system or the regulators don't tolerate this. But I'm talking about the United States mostly. Why haven't they been shamed by all of the disclosures about the behavior? Why haven't they been jailed for the destruction their actions are causing? Why do we keep falling for the same crap over and over? One of the answers is because many of the people running Wall Street and Washington, D.C. are literally psychopaths. According to psychologists and sociologists, many on Wall Street and D.C. are not like you and me. They are literally psychopaths. Reuters news agency reported last week, quote, in a survey of 500 senior executives in the United States and the United Kingdom, 26% of respondents, one in four, said they had observed or had firsthand knowledge of wrongdoing in the workplace, while 24%, one in four, said they believed financial services professionals may need to engage in unethical or illegal conduct to be successful. Do you understand that? 16% of respondents said they would commit insider trading if they could get away with it. And 30% said their compensation plans created pressure to compromise ethical standards or violate the law. Now, these are people who are self-reporting, so double, triple the numbers, okay? I mean, let's be real here. If 24% say, oh, yeah, well, I think sometimes you need to do unethical or illegal conduct to be successful. If 24% say that, you can bet your ass that probably 75% actually believe it, if it's not higher. And a number of commentators think those numbers are low because of the self-reporting. One expert said, quote, I discussed the survey with a few other people familiar with the banking industry, and they had the same reaction I did. If anything, those numbers are low. That makes sense. Admitting your criminal inclinations to a total stranger isn't as easy as telling them your favorite color or what kind of music you like, right? Psychopaths caused the financial crisis, and they will do it again and again and again. You want evidence? Take a look what has happened since 2007. Let's just take a look. One thing after another. Oh, and remember the J.P. Morgan Chase? Oh, yeah, we lost $1 billion. What's that up to now? $8 billion? $9 billion? And rising? The financial psychopaths generally lack empathy and interest in what other people feel or think. They display at the same time an abundance of charm, charisma, intelligence, credentials, an unparalleled capacity for lying, fabrication, and manipulation. A quote from Bloomberg, another quote from Bloomberg when we come back. Stick around, all right? I'm Mike Malloy. before the hour. A good example of a psychopath is you hear them all the time on right-wing radio. Beck is a psychopath. Limbaugh's a psychopath. Hannity's a psychopath. Before Satan snatched him, Andy was a psychopath. But we're talking about the corporate psychopaths at the helm of our financial institutions. They're the ones who are to blame for the financial crisis. You might say that the top 1% is chock-a-block with the psychopathic personality. These are people who perhaps due to physical factors that have to do with abnormal brain connectivity or chemistry, they lack what most of us would call a conscience. And they have few emotions and display an inability to have any feeling, sympathy, or empathy for other people. In this blog, it says, so how do people with such obvious personality flaws make it to the top of seemingly successful corporations? Well, according to a professor at the Nottingham Business School at Nottingham Trent University, quote, psychopaths take advantage of the relative chaotic nature of the modern corporation, including rapid change, constant renewal, and high turnover of key personnel. Such circumstances allow them to ascend through a combination of so-called charm and charisma, which makes their behavior invisible and makes them appear normal and even to be ideal leaders. And it goes on, but the first part of this article is what caught my attention. Why do we let it persist? Why don't we stop them? I mean, it follows as night follows day that the scandal and the corruption and the theft and the fraud would just continue. And the thing about it that gets weird, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Remember the SNL scandal back in the 80s? Do you remember savings and loans? I don't mean in the It's a Wonderful Life. I mean for real, back in the 80s, right? Do you remember that? Savings and loans? No? You don't? Okay. But that scandal involved several billion. And now look what we're talking about. We're talking about financial ripoffs that when they finally do bob to the surface are going to result in people having to deal with numbers that are just totally incomprehensible. I mean, describe to me $1 trillion. Describe to me $30 trillion. Describe to me $300 trillion. I mean, you can't. You can't describe it. And even if you could, I couldn't comprehend it. And vice versa. These numbers are, they might as well be theoretical. I have something to do with the Higgs boson, boompole, or whatever the hell it is zipping around inside a particle accelerator, right? 30 trillion? 300 trillion? What? So, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Janie Aguilar, whose message, this is for the anger proxy service that your show provides. Thanks. Thank you, Janie. Why do we let them get away with it? We don't do anything. We don't do anything. And I think that's because it's that, you know, phrase that was very popular a few months ago, learned helplessness. It bounced to the surface for discussion, learned helplessness. Why do people allow themselves to be so incredibly manipulated, even to the point of their own deaths? Learned helplessness. You know, the experiments with the rats, the lab rats, that no matter what they do, they're going to get punished. A jolt of electricity or something painful. No matter what they do, there's no way to escape. So what happens? A complete breakdown in the ability to, in rat logic, take a look at a situation and figure out, well, there's got to be an escape from this. And even if there is an escape, the idea of pursuing one becomes impossible. Learned helplessness. Is that what's happened to us? Is that what we're involved in here? Learned helplessness? I mean, if somebody came into your house, now let's leave guns out of this. If somebody came into your house and you were, I don't know, in the kitchen fixing dinner, and somebody just walked in through the front door and came in and started removing books off your bookshelf or digging around and getting heirlooms from your grandma and your grandpa and putting them in a big bag. I mean, what would you do? What would you, just stand there and continue mashing the potatoes? Continue fixing dinner? Oh, hi. Oh, listen, there's some stuff up there on the top shelf. Don't forget that. I mean, what the hell are you going to do? No, we're leaving guns out of it. You would probably pick up the rolling pin that you know, you were making some bread with and go over and bust the son of a bitch upside the head, right? And then you call the police or reverse it. You call the police and then, but I mean, this happens all the time. How many trillions of dollars of wealth was stolen from the American public since 2008? How many? How much? And we're not doing anything. We just, oh, okay. Hey, listen, you missed some stuff over there. Look over there behind the, see that painting I have up there? It's not a real painting. It's a fake. That's not really the Man of the Golden Helmet. It's just one that I couldn't afford a Rembrandt like that. But if you look behind it, yeah, okay. Now the combination is 4 right, 7 left, 9 right. Okay, you got it? Okay, reach in there and help yourself. Would you do that? Of course you wouldn't. Not unless you had learned that that's all you could do. So here we sit with what feels like learned helplessness. We can't do anything. Our electoral system is totally smashed. It's not ours anymore. You can go vote. Go vote as often as you want to. Show them your photo ID and go through all the rigmarole. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got candidate A that you never selected, candidate B that you never selected, but there they are. One has a D after his or her name. The other has an R after his or her name. Go ahead, vote. How did those two people happen to be in that slot that when you vote, if your candidate wins, so to speak, then that person is going to be either dictating or writing policy that comes from corporate masters. I mean, how did that happen? Now, if your candidate is not owned by the corporate masters and you vote for him or her, you understand that candidate has an ice cube's chance in hell of winning because the voting machines now are proprietary. You don't own them. The county doesn't own the program that runs the system. That's proprietary. That belongs to somebody else. Voting is now owned by corporate America. Now, will they rig the voting? Well, why wouldn't they? I mean, please. If the corporate masters take a look, oh, God, look at this. The socialist is ahead by 4-1. Quick, change the program. So why bother? I'm serious. Why bother? When do we get to the point where we and 30, 40, 50 million of our fellow citizens put ourselves on the gears and make the machine stop running? When are we going to do that? We're not? We're not ever going to do it? Okay. Well, then, here we are. A nation led by psychopaths, a nation owned by psychopaths, a nation being destroyed by psychopaths. So what's the point of playing this quadrennial game that we play of, oh, let's go elect a new president? What? Really? Oh. So you trot on down to your local precinct and standing outside are a bunch of white thugs. These are Republican poll watchers, you know. And if you are fully enmeshed in your learned helplessness, you may take a look at them and go, well, I don't know. Is it worth it to walk through that gauntlet? Eh, it doesn't matter. Turn around and go the other way. Which is probably the smartest thing you will have done. on Election Day. Unless you really believe that the system still works, do you believe that? If you really do believe it, then by all means, vote. Absolutely. If you still think the system works and is responsive to you and your neighbor and your fellow citizens' needs, vote. We'll take some phone calls when we come back. We have one open line here if you want to get in. 877-996-2556.
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Janie Aguilar. Thanks, Janie. Her message, this is for the anger proxy service your show provides. And Janie thanks me, and I thank you, Janie. Thank you very much. Michelle or Michael? Hello? Well, I don't think anyone's there. Tim in Northern California. Tim?
Yeah. Hey, I think more you're talking about sociopaths and psychopaths, all the psychopaths in the military. But what I wanted to say was one solution might be we feed all the rich to the pigs and have a big barbecue, and that might help them things out. And the other thing I was going to tell you about, I've already forgotten, I waited so long. It was something to do with something with it.
Something to do with something, yeah. Well, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Northern California. It's easy to forget things when you're out there.
Well, I'm a little past that. I think that's why I'm here, though. It's like, but it's really good to see that you're still on the radio.
Yeah, it's always a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, we hear you live, too, which is quite...
Yeah, KGOE, they do carry us live, which
the
is...
The only one has the courage up here. And but the other, there was one other thing I wanted to tell you that was kind of important, but... I didn't write it down, so it's gone, but thanks for what you're doing.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Thanks for checking in, all right? Thanks, Tim. Take care. Got love, Tim. Michelle, you there now?
I am here now. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, hear you just great. Thanks for sticking around.
Well, thank you for being on the air. I appreciate it. The thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that... there's, a million problems or more, and, you know, you hit on one of them. The psychopaths are in charge, which is very unnerving.
Right.
But what I think it really comes down to is two things, campaign finance and lobbying. And if we, as a group, could focus on that, then we could take control again, and then we could start tackling these issues one by one, from finance reform to, you know, making sure that our air is still healthy for not only for us to breathe, but our kids and so on and so forth. But I feel like we can't do anything until we take back control, and we can't take back control when people can buy and sell our politicians at will.
So what do we do?
Well, I was going to ask you a question. First of all, do you agree with what I just said?
Absolutely.
And then the second thing is you have the advantage over us in that you have a listening group. You have an audience. Why don't we start by getting people aware and focused on this and make this a driving issue where, you know, we start with petitions and we grow from there. And, you know, I think the problem with Occupy Wall Street is it had no focus, and so nothing got done. what if we made this a focus and really, as you said, did something? Because I think we all get the government that we deserve. You know what I'm saying?
I used to believe that we got the government we deserved, but at some point, the American public decided that voting was just not that big of an issue. And, as nature abhors a vacuum, so does the capitalist system, so did the corporatists, so they stepped in and took over the system. Here's my bottom line. First of all, Michelle, I agree with everything you said, about taking the system back. But the only way we can take the system back and to do it lawfully is to work through the system itself in order to change it. The system is no longer responsive, and the people who run the machine, the members of the House and the Senate that would have to rewrite the laws, are no longer responsive to you or me or to the other 200 million of us who may or may not, or 100 million of us who may or may not vote, even though we certainly have a legal right to do so. So my position has been, after advocating exactly what you're talking about for the past 20 years on various radio programs, my position now has changed completely. Since the system is no longer A, responsive, or B, amenable to change or open to us changing it, then there's only one thing left to do short of armed rebellion, and that is to stop participating in the system completely. Now, how to do that? You can't get 330 million Americans to all of a sudden on a given day stop everything. So what do? Well, you get 10% of that 330 million. Say 33 million people who on a certain day do nothing. Just do nothing. Only they do nothing publicly. And this goes all the way back, and I've said this a million times, it goes back to what Mario Savio said on the steps of Sproul Hall at UC Berkeley way back in 1964, I believe, where he said sometimes you get to, eventually you get to the point where the operation of the machine becomes so odious, so criminal, so awful, I'm paraphrasing, that the only thing left to do is to throw your body into the gears and make it stop. Now, he said that 40-some years ago. Nobody paid attention because, you know, we had the go-go 60s and we had the slumpy 70s and then we had the mid-decade of the 80s and then we had the crazed NASDAQ 90s and then we had the, you know, here we are. So I agree with your observation, but I don't believe the system is changeable any longer. And that's kind of the bottom line for me, Michelle, because I've been paying attention, not because I wanted to. I would just as soon stick my head in the sand and ignore all this crap. You know, I've got an 8-year-old, I've got grandchildren. I would rather focus on them until I realize that focusing on them, means nothing if I'm not active in trying to stop the madness. But I'm only one voice when you say, well, you have an audience. That really doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. If you're Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh and you have an audience, that means something. But this little program really doesn't mean anything. So all I can do is suggest that if people are serious about the corruption level in this country and really want to make it go away, they will replace the system. It's not changeable. It has to be replaced. Michelle, we're out of time. I appreciate what you had to say, and I thank you for calling. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. This hour is being sponsored by Chris from New York. Chris's message, this is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. Chris in New York. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the sponsorship and the sharp stick. All right. To your phone calls for a while here. Bill is in Paso Robles, California. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I am inspired by watching, the great Amy Goodman's show this morning, Democracy Now!, and she had this footage of fantastic speech by the guy is the president of the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
His name is something like, is Gar Alperowitz, something like that. Anyway, he was before an audience of, maybe 500, pretty young kids. And he, to make a long story short, he laid down to them your almost to the T, your philosophy of the only possible future of a social democratic system,
mm-hmm,
for this country and the kids. And well, I'll just jump to he said. He said, this is my vision to all of you, but basically it's going to be up to you young folks, 18 to 29 years old,
mm-hmm,
to eventually put this in place. It's going to be long and hard, but it's going to be, in the final analysis, it's going to be up, to you,
mm-hmm,
to you people, 18, 20, just went, and he knocked off all the main points that are your philosophy and which are mine, and it was just, Mike, it was just marvelous.
Well, that's good to know.
Oh, just let me throw this in before, mm-hmm, I sign off. He's just written a book. It's called America Beyond Capitalism.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Bill, thanks for the info and thanks for checking in. And I'm sure you know, and I'm sure that everyone knows, that a lot of us are on the same page, and none of us can claim authorship of these ideas of democratic socialism or social democracy. It is good to see young people being given the option. There was a time when, of course, the 60s changed things in terms of what was available to think about. But there was a time, and that time for me was the time that I grew up, the time that I came of age, where an option such as democratic socialism was, not only was it not an option, but if you even thought about it, you were committing a thought crime and would be punished appropriately. And if you think I'm kidding, talk to anyone who grew up in the 50s and then moved on into the 60s. For a lot of us, the 60s was liberating only in the sense that it liberated our minds. It didn't really liberate the society. It was instrumental in moving people toward some sort of liberation, whether it was illusory or real. I guess you would have to talk to individuals who whose group was moved toward freedom, whether or not that freedom is at this point real or just an illusion. But I also think that most people understand if you have even a basic understanding, I don't mean esoteric understanding, but just a basic understanding of how capitalism works or what it's about, what its goal is. Its goal is not to create jobs. Its goal is not to build strong families. Its goal is not to build a strong economy. Its goal is to accumulate as much wealth as humanly possible into the hands of as few people as possible. And through that accumulation of wealth, to wield absolute total control and domination. It is less an economic system and more a system, ultimately, of totalitarianism. It just uses deception and illusion to get there. And it also requires certain things in the real world that are impossible to deliver. Constantly expanding markets, constant reduction in the amount of money spent for certain aspects of production, most namely the human resource that goes into the production of wealth for the top 0.1%. You can only go so far with capitalism, point I'm getting at, because it's the exploitation of everything. Exploitation of natural resources, exploitation of wealth, exploitation of, or not wealth, of people, exploitation of talent, exploitation of mental ability. And it is a destructive, if ever a system was developed that is ultimately totally destructive, it's capitalism. The sad part of all this, of course, is that in this culture, in this society, in most Western former democracies, most capitalist systems, oh, and by the way, capitalism and democracy are totally antithetical. They cannot coexist. They simply cannot. There can be the illusion for a while that they can coexist, but one is feeding off the other until there's nothing left to eat. Capitalism devours democracy until eventually there's nothing left except a husk, kind of like cicadas that land on your tree in the backyard and they split open their shell and move on. And what's left is that husk that used to be democracy. They cannot coexist. They cannot, exist in the same reality. It's an impossibility. Take a look at what's going on. Take a look at the track, as miserable as it is, of so-called democracy, small d democracy in this country, and parallel track it with capitalism. And you tell me if they can coexist. Even you dumbass right-wingers, surely you're smart. Oh, never mind. But normal people, take a look at that. They can't exist together, he said adamantly. What do I base that on? My great learning, my multiple advanced degrees in socioeconomic policy? No, hell no. Just a lifetime of observation, I guess, and reading and listening to other people who have taken the time and the patience to directly or indirectly educate me, which is an ongoing process. I hope your process of education is an ongoing process also. But social democracy, democratic socialism, as the next step after this horrific machine is smashed into a million pieces and brought to a halt. Social democracy would be the next logical step in self-governance and a system of economics if we are serious about continuing as a species. If it's not already too late, if we are not serious about continuing as a species, then just continue to do what we're doing. And this is not profound thought. These are not heavy ideas. These are not deep thinking statements. This is just observation and common sense, I think.
Just look around. Dialogue so sad. If this world-
show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
21 past the hour. Tim is in Decatur, Alabama, listening on XM. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Good to talk to you again. You know, I get to thinking about this whole basis of what you've been talking about, and really it all adds up. I mean, if you go back into the days of the Old West, when you think about it, the big industries back then, of course, were like the railroads and the banks. And they had all these hanging judges around, and, you know, why do you need to do that? Well, they're cutting into your profits. You know, Billy the Kid and Jesse James and all these guys like that, you got to put a stop to that because it's cutting into the company's profits.
Right, exactly.
You know, so a lot of the morality comes out of all that. You trace it on back, and then really you're looking at it as, well, you know, you can't hunt on the king's land because you're stealing the king's deer or whatever it is. So it's less about morality, and it's more about convincing the people about who the bad guys and who the good guys are.
Yeah, less about morality, more about ownership.
Exactly. And one of the things I got to thinking about while I was on hold is how I was shocked at one point in my life, this was a long time ago, of the idea that there were a lot of people at the time that read those Western novels when they were more or less contemporaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they were cheering for the bad guys. They were cheering for the bank robbers and the train robbers.
Sure.
Because they were ripping off the big guys that were ripping them off.
Mm-hmm.
And you start adding it up and you start looking at what we got going on now. And I'm with you on this whole thing about why aren't people out in the streets with pitchforks and torches showing up and saying, hey, send the bankers out. We're ready for them.
Yeah, and I, you know, I've tried my entire life to stay away from anything that even has a faint smell of violence to it, because, you know, I don't consider myself a fool, and I understand where the power and the weaponry and the uniforms and the clubs are really amassed, and my side doesn't have them. And I also take a look at history, and I see that people who tended toward nonviolence, while they may have had more of a moral footing than people who advocate democratic socialism have, they still were able to influence, to a degree, history without getting violent. As a matter of fact, they absorbed the violence and just turned it into something that was not effective. So, there's a part of me that really wants to get that pitchfork, really wants to get that flaming torch, really wants to bring out the guillotine. There's also another part of me that says, look, the best way to stop this machine, because it is run by psychopaths, but it's also run by cowards. Now, they have the military, and they have the police, and they have this, and they have that. But the military and the police, when you get right down to it, if they could open their eyes, they would understand that they belong on the side of the people, not on the side of the banksters and the con artists and the thieves and the Wall Street types and the 1%. You show me a cop who's in the 1%, obviously I'll show you somebody who's on the take. Most cops are like you and me. They, you know, they make a living wage. If they're an officer, they may make a little bit more. You go in the military, you don't go in the military to make a living. You go in the military maybe for security or what have you, and some people go there because they do feel a sense of patriotism and feel that that's the best way to express it. But
yeah, that I know for sure, because in my life I have been in contact both with the military and with the police department. So yes, I know that.
Right, stop the machine though is just to cease operating with it. I mean, this is the part that frustrates the hell out of me. We don't have to get violent. We don't have to throw rocks. I've been watching the Intifada in the Middle East for 25 years now, and the one thing I can't understand on a gut level is why the Palestinians just don't sit down and stop everything and bring the whole damn thing to a stop. I don't understand why Americans who feel who have watched their lives destroyed, their wealth destroyed, their savings destroyed, their homes taken from them, their jobs sent overseas. Why we don't just stop? That's all we have to do. This is maddeningly simple. All we have to do is nothing. Refuse to participate. Just stop.
It's just that little old word fear. It's the thing of,
Well, I guess that's it, and what we're talking about.
He looks to the guy to the right, and he looks to the guy to the left, and he says, well, these other two guys aren't going to join with me, and so I'm going to be by myself, and
no, I hear you.
Fear sets in. I mean, that's how, like you were talking earlier, it's that conditions helplessness.
Mm-hmm. Learned helplessness, right.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Tim, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Hope you call again. Take care. I just, well, you know, I mean, it's kind of pointless to just keep saying it over and over again. I know most people get it. You don't have to throw firebombs. You don't have to throw Molotov cocktails. All you have to do is just stop.
Why must we stay? It's always gonna be a delicacy.
Attention. Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Chris in New York. His message is pretty simple. This is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. Podcast subscriptions you can get to at our website, MikeMalloy.com. I think they run $56 a year. And, of course, the sponsor, of course, is $100. Thanks, Chris. We mentioned earlier this evening the graft, the ripoff, the constant stealing from all of us, and they, and I think we're pretty clear on who they are. They don't just steal our paychecks and our savings and our home equity anymore. They're stealing our lives. They're stealing our ability to continue to function as a species. Maybe you and I will die before this comes to pass, but what about your kids? What about your grandkids? So the theft has become existential now, and it's not just reaching into your wallet, it's reaching into your soul. And they're taking everything. So at what point do we say no? You know, it's very clear that the highest law enforcement in our country is not going to do anything, whether that is the House Judiciary Committee that had a perfect opportunity to begin proceedings against the Bush crime family. You can make the case that Barack Obama is committing impeachable offenses right now in ordering the giving the unilateral order to assassinate people anywhere on earth. These are war crimes. I mean, Jesus God. And if American citizens are being killed, it's so outside the bounds of a lawful society as to render the whole idea of a lawful society totally moot, totally worthless, totally without meaning. I mean, we live in a country now where everything you do is monitored, everything is listened to or taken note of, And the president, whether it's this one or the next one or the one down the road, if we have very many more, can order based on circumstances, circumstantial evidence, association, reports from CIA operatives who are a bunch of goddamn demons from hell who will lie about anything, can order these people to die. And you're going to talk to me about, well, the system can be changed. How do you do that? Vote Democratic? Oh, no, I hear you. I hear the chorus of screams out there. You know, there you go, Malloy, undermining Democratic Party again. What about the Supreme Court? Oh, for God's sake. Whew. I mean, how long do we continue to buy into the illusion? That's all. When it becomes a crime against humanity, I mean, haven't we established that there are limits that even we won't go? I guess not. We've established those parameters for other leaders, other societies, other cultures, but it doesn't apply to us. If here's a crazy ass example. If the people in Bhopal, India, who survived the Union Carbide incident of decades ago, decided that finally they were able to retaliate and somehow got their hands on drone aircraft and launched them from some town in Mexico and controlled these aircraft into United States airspace and started targeting corporate officials or capitalists who were responsible and never brought before the bar, before the court, before justice, never suffered anything except some kind of monetary compensation that took decades to work out. And how many people died in Bhopal, India as a result of Union Carbide's plant, chemical plant, right in the middle of, this huge city? How many people died? Hundreds, tens of thousands, right? From just breathing this stuff and whatever. What would we do if these drone aircraft were circulating over the United States, run by some foreign power, and they were seeking justice, just like we run drone aircraft, other countries, and allegedly were seeking justice? Well, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, you have to be insane to be able to entertain or not to entertain, but to hold those thoughts in your head. It's legal for me to execute people at will. It is not legal for them to come here, even though we have created more death and destruction than these groups that we have now targeted. But it's not okay for them to come here and seek revenge, justice, whatever you want to call it. But the crimes committed by us are committed either directly or indirectly by our system, by capitalism, by our corporatists. They're the ones that order countries to be invaded. They're the ones that decide how many American soldiers are going to die. I read you those names of 11 people, American citizens killed last week, the majority of whom were in their 20s, for Christ's sake, dying for what? J.P. Morgan Chase? I'm sorry. I'm yelling. Gosh, you can't get people to listen to you when you're yelling, Mike. Bob is in Tucson, listening online. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Mike. Boy, it's really good to talk to you. You know, Gandhi, first they ignore you, and then they ridicule you, and then they fight you, and then you win.
And then you win, right.
I'm calling about a really amazing development in Iceland. Iceland has just hired an ex-cop to hunt down the banksters that wrecked their economy.
Really?
Yeah, and this is like translated by Le Monde, you know, from Icelandic. And so I had to, like, I was just kind of scrolling through the news feed on Facebook and came across this Occupy Canada feed. And so it was through them. And I guess you could, I don't use Google anymore. I use DuckDuckGo. But if you do a search on it, it's businessinsider.com, and it's on July 12th. So if anybody wants to look it up.
Businessinsider.com?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, on July 12th. And like I said, I got this, so somebody at Occupy Canada picked it up, and then they put it on the newsfeed, you know. But I think it's kind of neat that, we're talking about, you know, we need some sort of...
Law enforcement.
Yeah, somebody that has some sort of, you know, worldwide weight, respect. Iceland, I think, didn't they decide not to take the bailout, and they just let everything fall.
Yeah, they decided that it was better to let the international bankers just kiss their collective cold butts, and that the Icelanders were going to continue living their life. They stopped home foreclosures. They stopped businesses from going belly up because of money owed to foreign, you know, the IMF or these international cartels of thieves and liars, and the society is making the greatest comeback since Lazarus, and it's amazing that nobody else takes a look at this and says, well, yeah, why are look at Greece, look at Italy, look at Spain, look at Portugal, I mean, why look at Ireland? Why are these countries and Iceland is not? Why are these countries saying, oh, woe is us, woe is us? Okay, we're going to cut everything. We're going to put old people in the street. We're going to stop feeding children. We're going to stop education. We're going to stop scientific development to pay these bastards.
Well, you know, you're right. You're right. You know, like I have voted. I'm 66, so I voted for since I was 18 every single year, just like a good Clevelander. We all did that, you know.
Right.
And now this is the first time ever that I think I may not vote.
I hear you.
And in Greece, you know, they have a different electoral system than we do. We can't, you know, expect the Green Party to have any kind of pull, you know, because of the two-party system that we're stuck with.
That's
in
true.
In Greece, they had, you know, multi parties.
Well, and the problem in Greece, of course, is the fact that I forget the name of the party, but the Nazis now are stepping into the void. Bob, I have to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate what you had to say. We'll be right back. Stay with us, please. The hour. This hour has been sponsored by Chris in New York. And his message is, this is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. Thank you, Chris, for both. And I don't know, did I? I don't think I did. Thank Brad Friedman for sitting in Friday the 13th. Last Friday, so we could go pick up Molly at camp. She had a great time, by the way. So thanks, Brad. Phil is in Jasper, Indiana, listening on Sirius. Hello, Phil.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
A little nervous talking to the master, but I remember you back in the old WLS days, you and Jay Marvin. I listened to you religiously back then.
Oh, my God. That seems like a different lifetime. It wasn't all that long ago, about 12, 14 years ago, but it seems like a different lifetime.
Yeah. I had a dream today.
Yeah?
That you and Rush Limbaugh had a show like Hannity and Combs. And Limbaugh said something to you. You know, some of these dreams you have, they make no sense. But Limbaugh said something to you, and you came across that counter on his back like a monkey on a gorilla and whooped up on him, and then it was the end of the dream, and I woke up like I was on a tie stick high or something, you know. I was just hoping, I thought, I want to get through to him. I got to tell him this. I mean, it just amazed
That's
me.
Funny. That's funny. I couldn't stand to be around him. I really couldn't. The man just totally creeps me out. And as far as Alan Combs is concerned, I don't know why. Well, I do know why he sold himself into Hannity bondage. To make a few bucks. A lot of liberals will do that. They'll put themselves in a completely untenable position in order to make some money. And I guess that's the way that's what the system dictates. So
yeah.
I feel sorry for Alan Combs because he lost his soul all those years he was with Sean Hannity. Hannity just stuck a straw into Alan Combs' belly button and sucked everything out. There's nothing left inside Alan. Alan is just walking around wondering, you know, when the Grim Reaper is going to show up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hannity makes all the lies, gets the big show, and Combs tells the truth and gets stuck on late night. I mean, you know, go figure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But more on a serious note, I'm a union truck driver, union freight hauler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, away from my family all week long, and I'm out here, I listen to all these truckers, and you can talk until you're blue in the face about the absolute fact. If you just fire up a computer and look this stuff up, or listen to the right people like you on the radio, you can find out the truth. Very simple. It's very simple to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you talk to some of these drivers out here, and I come in this, we got terminals down there in Georgia, and I come into Georgia a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're foxheads.
Yeah.
They're idiots. So what do you do, Mike? You can't tell these people nothing. They're ideologues. They will not listen.
I know. I certainly agree with that. I don't think it's possible to convert people away from the self-destructive path that a lot of them are on. There's just nothing you can do. And I think the reason for that, this is one of the things that I hold Limbaugh and this whole cadre of right-wing radio people responsible for, and the Rupert Murdoch television network. They have spent collectively the past 30 years just absolutely using the techniques that were put together by Heinrich Himmler in Germany in the 30s, and that is to tell the big lie, to make everything a lie, and just keep repeating it 24/7 over and over and over again in this right-wing echo chamber. And after a while, I mean, if you do that for 30 years, you'll have two generations that are incapable of critical thinking, just incapable of independent thinking. And afraid of it, afraid of independent thinking, afraid of critical thinking, because, you know, when Limbaugh first came on the air, he used to say to people, and a lot of people said, well, he's just making a joke. No, he's not. He would say, I will digest the news. I will take a look at what is going on. All you have to do is listen to this program, and I will make everything clear for you. Well, you know, we're not an exceptionally bright population, Phil. You know that. I mean, here in the United States, we're just not. So a lot of people picked up on that and bought into it completely. And this is the one thing that has infuriated me, the fact that the dumbing down of this culture has occurred in tandem with the rise of right-wing media. And it's just a damn shame. But you're never gonna reach them. You're never going to talk these right wingers out of their trance. It can't be done. A few might eventually stumble out of the thicket and realize what happened to them and how their brains were sucked out of their heads. But they have to come to that on their own. You and I can't do it. You know, you just can't do it.
That's true. But I keep listening to you. I keep up the fight.
All right. Well, that's
all you can do.
That's about it, Phil. Thank you, sir. Drive safely. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. All right, we have a couple of people still on hold. We're just not going to get to you because the clock is ticking down. I do not understand how and why this idea of willful ignorance has taken such deep root in this country, in our culture. I cannot understand it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If you've been wondering